All right, this evening we will be looking into chapter 31, which we only partially finished last week. We got up into verse 13. We're going to do a similar thing this week, apportioning these verses in very different sized chapters, but especially also kind of oddly to me, I wasn't there in the 1300s when they decided what to do with chapters and verse numberings. But we've got a whole section here where on several occasions it just seems to me like, well, it's just a terrible place, you know, to put a chapter break, and here is the terrible place not to put one. And so, all things, you know, it's easier if you can just have something as simple and straightforward and say, now we're going to do two chapters, but we're going to have to start in the middle of one, and we'll try to get through the 47th verse of the second here this evening. You will, of course, remember the circumstances. I've been showing you for some weeks the various photographs from Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, because in chapters 27 through 30, they are really the focus of all that is said. What is said is about terrible curses twice, and in between, sandwiched between them, wondrous blessings, both of which will surely come upon these people, depending on how well or how poorly they serve their God. And they were to remember all of this once they had crossed the Jordan, had come into the very center of the promised land. Now, geographically, it's about as close to dead center as you can possibly get. And they're in that region that at Jesus' time will be called Samaria, you know, the central part. And these two hills, the people would be divided into six tribes each. There would be antiphonal responses, which simply means you have voices that are going over against each other. And these blessings and curses then will not only be recited, but they will be vowing that they understand them, that they will be subject to God's admonitions, and then will either reap good things or bad as they have sown. But as you can see tonight, I've left that now as we begin what is the very final part of the book of Deuteronomy and what is then the end of Moses' life. This is our only account of his passing. It is a fairly full account. It's a very personal account. He'll do much speaking here in what is the last 24, 48 hours of his life. And this will be taking place now, forgetting, you know, the 27 through 30 chapters, which will eventually be lived out and vows taken on Ebal and Gerizim. We are back here in the plains of Moab. I thought tonight especially I wanted you to see this picture, because today we think of the plains of Moab, and generally we think of the plains of Moab as being among the most desolate places on earth. You know, surely no single seed could ever grow. And it is, you know, the north shore of the Dead Sea. It's the lowest place on earth. It is brutally hot, fatally so, often enough, in the summertime. But at various times of the year, it's really quite lush. Here's a relatively recent photograph of the plains of Moab, all in green. And so for your cattle, for your sheep, for your goats, for your horses, for so many animals, you know, at certain times of the year, it's just lush and plush. And it's a land flowing with milk and honey. As a matter of fact, what would be not very far from the photograph you're looking at right here, at its flood stage in the wintertime, we're told, the Jordan, before it had all of its water siphoned off as they are today for agricultural purposes in modern Israel, could be a mile and a half wide. A mile and a half of water that would have spread out, lazily, gently flowing now as it's come to the lowest point on earth to enter into the Dead Sea. And so, as is often the case geographically in Israel, we today have just a terribly mistaken understanding of what it's like. If God is promising a land flowing in milk and honey, and all these people are seeing from Mount Nebo is the desolation, you know, that I've shown you previously in the plains of Moab at High Sabor, you know, I wonder if they wouldn't say, well, you know, maybe we're better off in Egypt again. But not so. And so here we have Moses now in what are his very final speeches, having recited all of the law, giving orders for it to be inscribed on stones, an altar to be built, Ebal and Gerizim to be the testimony for the centuries to come of these events. He now becomes very, very, very personal. So, in verse 14, we have a conversation that begins between Moses and the Lord himself. In 31:14 of Deuteronomy, Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, The time for you to die is near. Call Joshua. Present yourselves at the tent of meeting that I may commission him. So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves at the tent of meeting. You know, I've already forgotten. I asked you to look at that song. Is it familiar to anybody? The song, does the supplemental S-22 look familiar to anybody? Ted, looks familiar to you? Okay, you'd be willing to sing it to these totally ignorant people. Okay, well, a little later, then we'll make an attempt at it. Donna thinks that there is another song that we may be more familiar with. It has the same title, and maybe it's just a different set of music or something, but I couldn't find it. So we'll take a stab at this one here. And I assure you, I do not always think of you as being totally ignorant. Okay. I'm reminded of, what is it? Bilbo at that unexpected party, you know, he was giving those backhanded compliments. Okay, at any rate, all that aside, let's get rid of the frivolity. And back to verse 14. We are about to commission Joshua. Try for a moment just to put yourself in his shoes. This poor man, you know, is about to take over responsibility for a gigantic number of people and face his responsibility, which is the conquest of what will be a very resistant population. So they have great promises, but they still have great challenges that lie ahead, you know, as well. And so Joshua is about to get, you know, his crowning as the next leader. He is being inaugurated to take Moses' place. So in verse 15, Yahweh appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood at the doorway of the tent. And Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers, and this people will arise and play the harlot with the strange gods of the land into the midst of which they are going, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I've made with them." Now, obviously, at this point, God did not pause, but let's think about the shock that's just entered, you know, Moses' ears. He knows how close he is to death. He's just been told you are now to put Joshua in his place of responsibility. And the first thing God says on this occasion is, these people are not going to be faithful, such as you have all proven yourselves to be. They're just going to fail completely. How do you feel? How does Joshua feel? At this point, there's no particular time frame given to it. Is Joshua listening to this and thinking, well, I'm being handed nothing but unfaithful people who will fail? I'm doomed in the mission that I'm about to get, you know, and to take up. So these couple of verses here, 14, 15, you know, 16, in the very presence of what is called the Shekinah, not sure about the pronunciation, but S-H-E-K-I-N-A-H is that Hebrew word that represents the very presence of God. A very different word, but gives a similar idea, I think, in English, is epiphany. We talk about having an epiphany. We mean, usually, well, I just had a great idea, but what it means is you've come into the presence of God. So an epiphanos is to have a revelation because you're in the presence of God. You're receiving it from Him. Well, they're in the presence of God. They're seeing Him in this pillar of cloud, which had led them by day for 40 years, has appeared yet again in the tabernacle in the wilderness, now on the plains of Moab. And so they're all going to fail. Now 17, "Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day. I will forsake them, hide my face from them, and they shall be consumed, and many evils and troubles shall call upon them, so that they will say in that day, is it not because our God is not among us that these evils have come upon us? But I will surely, second time, hide my face in that day because of all the evil which they will do, for they will turn to other gods. Now, therefore, write this song for yourselves and teach it to the sons of Israel. Put it on their lips in order that this song may be a witness for me against the sons of Israel. For when I bring them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to their fathers, and they have eaten and are satisfied and become prosperous, then they will turn to other gods and serve them and spurn me and break my covenant. Now let's pause there for just another moment or two. Especially, brethren, in this 20th verse. Twice God has threatened, has warned, what, you know, kind of on the face of it doesn't sound like such a big deal, but I hope it will, as the scriptures say, sink deeply into our ears. God will turn his face away from them. God will hide his face from them. When God turns his face away from you, there's no good thing left in your life. If God turns his face away, we would more likely, I think, say, turn his back on us. But if God turns away from you, what have you got? He gives you life. He gives you direction. He gives you hope. He has given you redemption. He's paid the price. You know, in all ways, all that is good in our lives is dependent upon the good favor of our God smiling upon us, upon his receiving us into his presence, upon our being welcome into his presence, on our being respected and embraced and loved and appreciated as any parent does faithful children. He's going to turn his face away from them. And then he says, twice after that, I want this witness against them. I want a witness that is for me, God, that will be against them. And I'm picking a song. I, God, have written a song. I want you, Moses, to teach it to these people. Keep it upon their lips. Every time they sing this song, it'll be a witness for me and against them. Now, therefore, brethren, we need to really take note of the importance of chapter 32, which chapter we are not going to finish. We'll just go down to the end of the song. There's more to come in chapter 31, obviously, but the song he's referencing here, the inspired hymn, is chapter 32, verses 1 through 43. And I'm hoping to get a little farther tonight, but the song itself ends in 43. This song is a witness. It is a thing that testifies for God and against these people. When you have testimony, you have someone saying, thus and such transpired, took place, or will happen. You know, but testimony is when you verbalize, you express under the most solemn promises of meticulous accuracy that thus and such is so or will be. So God wants a song, which we all recognize is a memory device to be taught to these people by Moses on this very auspicious occasion and to be sung by them with some frequency so that it will be the testifier of what God has done and what God will do depending on how these people will respond to his message. So here stand Moses and Joshua listening to the very voice of God before the very presence of God in the cloud at the entry to the tabernacle, which of course they've been carrying about in the wilderness for some 39 years now. And there in the plains of Moab, perhaps as lush green as you see right now at this time of year, whatever it may have been. And now, Joshua, this is what you're inheriting from Moses. Now, in verse 20, "For when I bring them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to give to their fathers, and they have eaten and are satisfied and become prosperous, they'll turn to other gods and serve them." That's the second thing I want to stop and pause for a moment about. Brethren, if ever there was a nation that should remember this verse, the great blessing that lies within it, and the terrible temptation that is inherent there as well. And recognize that when you read world history, and I'm fascinated by it, I mean, here I am, I'm not teaching Revelation even, and yet I've been listening in the mornings to Josephus, Wars of the Jews, gotten through several books, you know, just in the last couple of days, reliving all that information. I just live for history. I just love history. Don and I trapped out here in this house, you know, we don't even have a good TV signal, but I remember to bring my DVD player. I'm spending a lot of time in the library picking out discs, you know, and came home today. Got some history of all the Native American history in the United States. I've got other history, you know, that I'm looking forward to getting into. It's my forte. I love it. Well, history tells us, brethren, there has been very few times in world history when any people has enjoyed anything remotely like the wealth, the power, and the peace that you and I take for granted every day. And look at the fearsome thing that lurks therein. In verse 20, when I bring them into the land flowing with milk and honey, is there in natural resources a richer nation on earth? I deny it. Than ours, that is. Which I swore to give to their fathers. He invokes the fact that this is a hundreds and hundreds of year old promise. They have eaten and are satisfied and become prosperous. When you have a full belly, satisfied, and prosperous, Satan knows that he's got you now in such a weak position. When these people come to that, then they'll turn to other gods and serve them and spurn them and break my covenant. Now, what is the altogether different way that Jesus said exactly the same thing? See, there you go. All I had to do was just start off with that phrase. Carol got there before I even could. Easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than what? Rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay? Riches, which we seek, you know, so feverishly and eagerly. Riches which God promises that are just, you know, hard to imagine. Malachi, you know, ends with a promise about God, you know, pouring out the heavens upon you if you just serve Him. And they've had all the blessings there in chapter 27, 28. But what? These blessings are of great responsibility, of great danger. You know, I always use a chainsaw as the example. A chainsaw, you know, just a wondrous device. I've spent hundreds of hours with mine, 23 years. Our primary source of heat was me getting out, you know, to cut trees down every year for 23 years and stacking cords of firewood, you know, and so I understand a chainsaw. But when my kids wanted to play with a chainsaw, what was the answer? No way, Jose. Too dangerous. Too powerful. So it's our heat for the winter. It's our great comfort, you know, we need it desperately. But you kids don't play around with that. And this is the way all of God's blessings, I suppose, have always been. They are great, they are generous, they're powerful, they're important. But they're dangerous, and they have to be handled appropriately and carefully and in deep gratitude, you know, and certainly in this case, with some trepidation. So in Deuteronomy 31, and in verse 20, when I bring them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore their fathers, they've eaten and are satisfied and become prosperous, then they'll turn to other gods and serve them, spurn me and break my covenant. Well, such a heartbreaking tragedy that that's the case. But it has proven to be essentially without exception. And it's certainly the case, you know, today. I just absolutely marvel at what our country has become just in my life's time. It is just truly, again, heartbreaking. We used to be a nation that even if people didn't choose to serve God fully, as the Bible describes, they at least had some kind of claim to morality that was kind of Bible-based, you know, in all the denominational churches that we had just proliferating everywhere. And all of that is just collapsing. I mean, even that, which wasn't very faithful, is just collapsing. And it's just the nature of the game, I guess. So do you pray for wealth? Do you pray for riches? Do you pray for prosperity? Yes, brethren, I think you should. We ought to continue in that. Yes, it is God's great gift. Yes, He would favor us with that. He would bless us with that. Ecclesiastes has much to say about it. But only if you're wise. Only if you're faithful. Only if you'll serve your God. Only if you love Him with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, are you likely to survive this blessing. And certainly in succeeding generations, even greater temptation and trial. 21. We're in 31:21. God continues to speak in what must be the trembling ears of both Moses and Joshua. 21. Then it shall come about, when many evils and troubles have come upon them, that this song will testify before them as a witness, for it shall not be forgotten from the lips of their descendants, for I know their intent, which they are developing today, before I brought them into the land which I swore. So Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it, as Ted's about to do for us with our supplemental songbooks number 22 in a moment, wrote this song that same day, taught it to the sons of Israel. And then he commissioned Joshua the son of Nun and said, "Be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the sons of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with you." It came about when Moses finished writing the words of this law in a book until they were complete, that Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, saying, "Take this book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh your God, that it may remain there as a witness against you. For I know your rebellion and your stubbornness. Behold, while I'm still alive with you today, you've been rebellious against Yahweh. How much more then after my death? Assemble to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing and call the heavens and the earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death, you will act corruptly and turn from the way which I've commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. For you will do that which is evil in the sight of Yahweh, provoking him to anger with the work of your hands." Then Moses spoke in the hearing of all the assembly of Israel the words of this song until they were complete. Now, one thing I'd like to do quickly, it'll all be on the screen for you here now, before we open up our supplemental songbooks to number 22 and, you know, have a go with the song that will follow what I'm about to say, so get your songbooks out. We're going to be singing supplemental song number 22 here, after just a couple of slides in which we want to think about verse 23 for a moment. In 31:23, he commissioned Joshua the son of Nun and said what? Be strong and what?
Courageous.
Now, Joshua, be strong and courageous. Now, we know the difference between those two. We see how they're closely related. We recognize that without these two things, little can be accomplished in anybody's life. Whatever you set out to do, there'll be resistance and adversity and difficulty. And so if you're not strong in pursuing your course and seeking whatever it is that you're working on, you know, to its conclusion, you'll never reach your goal. And courage. Courage is the ability to rise up and do what has to be done in the face of opposition, in the face of difficulty, when you would be sorely tempted to just say it's not worth it, to turn around, when you are tempted to be timid and feeble and frightened. Then courage is that virtue that rises up in your heart and says, I can conquer this thing. I'm going to do what I have to do anyway. I got to swim this river. I got to climb that tree. I've got to face that beast. I've got to run this race. Whatever it is I got to do, I've got to find it in my heart to conquer self and go do this thing. And then I've got to be strong to see it through to the end. Well, we've heard that expression, be strong and courageous, already in this book. In chapter 31, verses 6 and 7, we have this exact charge. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them, for Yahweh your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them. You shall give it to them as an inheritance. So as I started this class here in verse 14, you know, I'm skipping over 6 and 7, which we had already done last week. This be strong and courageous had already been set before them. This charge that Joshua is going to be the leader has already been set before them. But what has already been set before them also is God's reason for strength and courage. The Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He won't fail you. He won't forsake you. And be strong and courageous, because you're going to win. You will take this people into that land. You'll give it to them as an inheritance. So for all the kind of downside that we started off with tonight, as soon as I die, you people, I know you, you're all rebellious and you're going to turn against me, and I know it because God's told me so. So Moses and Joshua hear it from the Lord. Moses says it again to the people. But now in chapter 31, they've gotten both. Moses and Joshua know they cannot fail in that which God ordains. The people can, but they need to be strong and courageous and prosecute the charge that God has given to them all the way to the end, because God will be with whomever is faithful to Him. And we just read it in verse 23, of course. And now comes Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. What's the next book in your Bible? We're only a couple of chapters away. Who's being commissioned? Joshua 1, 5 through 7 says, no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I've been with Moses, I'll be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn away from it to the right or the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. I'm astonished how often people who are Christians, ostensibly or nominally at least, find themselves in difficult circumstances and sometimes can remain there for entire lifetimes and just never succeed. Now, after what we've been reading, one might be tempted to ask, whose fault was that? Were you strong? Were you courageous? Were you faithful? Were you to meet God in your judgment today? Could you stand there and say, Lord, I was strong. I was courageous. I was faithful. I knew your law. I kept your law. I sang that song. Well, you can stand before God and do that. What has God throughout the Old Testament and the New said? He longs to bless His children. Many a child is ruined by wealth, but every decent and wise father gives it to him, along with the instruction to be strong, to be courageous, to be faithful to God, which is to say to be wise in your service of the King. So, brethren, you can't fail when you are giving yourself over fully in service. Now, you know, we've talked about this 100 times. I know there are times we get tried. God also warns us that you can have terrible problems, you know, and all the rest of that. But most of the time, I suspect, when people are really not faring all that well, they got no right or reason to be blaming God. And when judgment comes, they'll be standing there speechless, because they can't claim to be anything like a Joshua or a Moses, just like the people that are being described instead. The next two verses are, verse 8, you know, Joshua 1 still, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth. I won't ask for a show of hands of everyone here who will say, yep, that's me, that describes me for sure. This book of the law has not departed from my mouth. But you shall meditate on it day and night. Yep, for sure, that's me. Oh boy, that's me. I meditate on God's word day and night now, don't I? So that you may be careful to do according to all that's written in it. Well, that's me. I'm really careful. His word's on my lips. I haven't forgotten any of it. I meditate on it day and night. And I keep it all, too. For then, you will make your way prosperous. Then you will have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for Yahweh your God is with you wherever you go. Now again, always the caveat. I know there's a book of Ecclesiastes. Things can go, you know, every way that are possible on this earth. I also know that you're not Joshua and I'm not either. That this is a prophetic inauguration. This is, you know, the transfer of power from Moses to Joshua. None of us are that. I understand that. But I did a sermon not long ago, you reap what you sow. And we looked at an awful lot of passages where that, you know, is just the nature of God's whole mindset on how the world works. You reap what you sow. And so, brethren, in general terms, these words are no less useful to us and ought no less to be obeyed and practiced than they were for Joshua. The same chapter 1 in Joshua, now skipping a few verses to verse 18, says, anyone who rebels against your command, Joshua, and does not obey your words in all that you command him, shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. Now, brother, when you have to kill somebody because they won't do what God says, because they won't obey you as a leader, when you are to kill them for their disobedience, would that take some courage and strength to pull off? Not too many natural killers in the world, brethren. I've read books on the topic of how hard it is to kill. A very fascinating book I read quite a few years ago about how difficult it is for men, even under fire in war, to actually point their weapon at another human being who is trying to kill them. Fascinating book. Endless statistics and stories about how hard it is for militaries a world over to train people not to tremble at the given moment, to actually take the life, even though it's trying to kill you. Most of the time, those bullets that we so amply supply go sailing off into space because there's just a psychological block against killing somebody. It takes mighty strength and great courage to obey a command from God that says, put to death those who will not obey me. Now, in all those other passages we've talked about on capital punishment, frequently it mentions so that everyone else may see and fear. This is how you get a nation in line. It's when the leaders are so strong and courageous that they will practice capital punishment in the best interest of the nation. We don't see much of that anymore in our country. The last of these, though not the last in Scripture that I wanted to talk about, is in Joshua 10, verse 25. Joshua then said to them, do not fear or be dismayed. Be strong and courageous. For thus Yahweh will do to all your enemies with whom you fight. And in the next verse, he kills five kings that came against him. Because he could not fail when he was strong and courageous. So that gets passed on. You'll see a lot of that in 1st or 2nd Chronicles, I forget which. But, you know, in the mouths of others. And so I'll pass on that right now. For the moment, Ted, would you give a stab at this? Let's see if we could sing number 22 in our supplemental book, which is also unknown to me. So I think Donna's right. I keep hearing a different song that has the same words, I think. But let's see if we can't work through this a little bit.
So if it doesn't offend anybody, I have an a cappella version that was sung at Florida College. And since I'm the only one that knows this, it's probably better that we at least listen to it once so that we know how the song goes, and then we'll give it a stab.
It is this one, though?
Yeah. Yep.
There's no objection to that, is there, Elders? A cappella song.
Jerry, can you turn on the podium mic?
It's on.
Okay.
Oh, podium.
Yeah, podium mic.
Sing along if you can, if you pick it up.
Thank you.
All right, so it's not terribly difficult. It's pretty straightforward, so. Let's see if this thing works. So, be strong, you hosts of the Lord. Rise up for the battle and gird on your swords. The land of His promise is yours now by right. Take all He has given, go forth in the fight. Be strong and conquer the foe. The Lord God is with you wherever you go. Be strong. Through God you will win. Through great be the armies of error and sin. Your captain will lead you to conquer the land. His arm cannot fail you, and they cannot stand. Be strong and conquer the foe. The Lord God is with you. Strong, consider His law, regard it with reverence, perform it with awe. Be careful to follow all God has decreed, for then He will bless you and you succeed. Be strong and conquer the foe. The Lord God is with you wherever you go. Be strong. Be strong. Be strong.
Well, that's a good song, isn't it? Okay, back to chapter 32 now. We've set the stage for a song whose melody, of course, we know nothing about. It is Hebrew to the core. It may not then have rhymed by sound the way our songs do, as you've heard so often that in Hebrew poetry they can rhyme ideas, if you will, rather than the sound of the words. But it went like this, starting in 32:1. Give ear, O heavens, and let me speak, and let the earth hear the words of my mouth. Let my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, as the droplets on the fresh grass, and as the showers on the herb. For I proclaim the name of Yahweh, ascribe greatness to our God. The rock, His work is perfect, for all His ways are just. A God of faithfulness and without injustice, righteous and upright is He. They have acted corruptly toward Him. They are not His children because of their defect, but are perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus repay Yahweh, O foolish and unwise people? Is not He your Father who has bought you? He has made you and established you. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of all generations. Ask your father, and he will inform you, your elders, and they will tell you. When the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, when He separated the sons of man, He set the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of the sons of Israel. For Yahweh's portion is His people. Jacob is the allotment of His inheritance. He found him in a desert land and in the howling waste of a wilderness. He encircled him. He cared for him. He guarded him as the pupil of his eye. Like an eagle that stirs up its nest, that hovers over its young, he spread his wings and caught them. He carried them on his pinions. Yahweh alone guided him, and there was no foreign god with him. He made him ride on the high places of the earth, and he ate the produce of the field. He made him suck honey from the rock, and oil from the flinty rock, curds of cows and milk of the flock with fat of lambs, and rams, the breed of Bashan, and goats with the finest of the wheat and of the blood of grapes. And you drank wine. But Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. Yar grown fat, thick and sleek. Then he forsook God who made him and scorned the rock of his salvation. They made him jealous with strange gods. With abominations they provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons who were not God, to gods whom they have not known. New gods who came lately, whom your fathers did not dread. You neglected the rock who begot you and forgot the God who gave you birth. And Yahweh saw this and spurned them because of the provocation of his sons and daughters. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end shall be. For they are a perverse generation, sons in whom is no faithfulness. They've made me jealous with what is not God. They have provoked me to anger with their idols. So I will make them jealous with those who are not a people. I will provoke them to anger with foolish nations. For a fire is kindled in my anger and burns to the lowest part of Sheol and consumes the earth with its yield, sets on fire the foundations of the mountains. I will heap misfortunes on them. I will use my arrows on them. They will be wasted by famine and consumed by plague and bitter destruction. In the teeth of beasts I will send upon them with a venom of crawling things of the dust. Outside, the sword shall bereave, and inside, terror, both young man and virgin, the nursling with the man of gray hair. I would have said, I will cut them to pieces. I will remove the memory of them from men. Had I not feared the provocation by the enemy, lest their adversaries should misjudge, lest they should say, our hand is triumphant, and Yahweh has not done all this. For they are a nation lacking in counsel. There is no understanding in them. Would that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would discern their future. How could one chase 1,000 and two put 10,000 to flight unless their rock had sold them and the Lord had given them up? Indeed, their rock is not like our rock. Even our enemies themselves judge this. For their vine is from the vine of Sodom, from the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes are grapes of poison. Their clusters bitter. Their wine is the venom of serpents and the deadly poison of cobras. It is not laid up in store with me, sealed up in my treasuries. Vengeance is mine and retribution. In due time their foot will slip, for the day of their calamity is near and the impending things are hastening upon them. For Yahweh will vindicate his people and will have compassion on his servants. When he sees their strength is gone, and there is none remaining, bond or free, and he will say, where are their gods, a rock in which they sought refuge, who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their libation? Let them rise up and help you. Let them be your hiding place. See now that I am he, and there is no god besides me. It is I who put to death and give life. I have wounded, and it is I who heal. There is none who can deliver from my hand. Indeed, I lift up my hand to heaven and say, as I live forever, if I sharpen my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on justice, I will render vengeance on my adversaries, and I will repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood. My sword shall devour flesh with the blood of the slain and the captives from the long-haired leaders of the enemy. Rejoice, O nations, with his people. or he will avenge the blood of his servants and will render vengeance on his adversaries and will atone for his land and his people. All right, Ted, would you lead us in that song, please? What? We sing, be strong and courageous. You know, and it's all uplifting. Okay, I can do that. But what was the song that God taught Moses to stand as a witness for him against them? The song says, I, God, know the end from the beginning. I, God, know the future before it is lived. I, God, tell you that you will fail me. And when you do this song, you will remember. You'll remember you've been singing my punishments year after year and generation after generation. You will remember that I warned you. You will remember that I will avenge myself on those who will not serve me. Now I'm thinking, on the plains of Moab, I pretty well got people's attention. I'm thinking 100%, they saw that cloud before the tent of meeting. Moses and Joshua standing there at attention in the praise of God. You're about to cross this Jordan. I'll tell you what's going to happen. Be strong and courageous, and you cannot fail. But refuse to serve me fully, and you'll reap what you sow. Verse 44. Then Moses came and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people, he with Joshua the son of Nun. When Moses had finished speaking all these words to all Israel, he said to them, take to your heart all the words with which I am warning you today, which you shall command your sons to observe carefully, even all the words of this law. For it is not an idle word for you, it is your life. And by this word you shall prolong your days in the land, which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. That's the end of our class tonight. That's where I think the chapter should be. And so we'll move on next week. We're going to be coming to the end this next week. Are you sober? Are we so different? Can we escape this wrath? Are there no songs that testify against us and for our God? Go home, brethren, in sober knowledge that if you're strong and courageous, you cannot fail. But if you're not, the devastation coming for you is just unspeakable. Nighty night.